Hi, it's Tony Bruschi. When you're not enjoying our haunting episodes of The Grave Talks, I invite you to check out our true crime and disaster podcast, Dark Side of Wikipedia, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of a recent episode of Dark Side of Wikipedia. For nearly two decades, a killer known only as BTK would terrorize Wichita, Kansas, causing neighbors to question neighbors, friends to suspect the worst in those they trusted, and would create an atmosphere of fear as citizens wondered who would be the next victim and why. Then the mysterious killer would disappear, re-emerging nearly 15 years later. Would he strike again?
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Dennis Lynn Rader is an American serial killer known simply as BTK, or the BTK Strangler. Rader gave himself the name BTK for bind, torture, kill between 1974 and 1991. Rader killed 10 people in Wichita, Kansas metro area. Rader sent taunting letters to police and newspapers describing the details of his crimes. After a decade-long hiatus, Rader resumed sending letters in 2004, leading to his 2005 arrest and subsequent guilty plea. He's serving 10 consecutive life sentences at the El Dorado Correctional Facility in Kansas. And that's where we begin our story today. A look at the dark side of Wikipedia and the entry on the BTK killer, Dennis Rader. Tony and Carol Hughes joining you for this episode of The Dark Side of Wikipedia. What's interesting about this episode, Carol, you have spent a majority of your life there in Wichita.
Yes.
While these events unfolded. So it's going to be really interesting to hear your perspective on this whole thing. And you've been in the media for a good chunk of it as well. So I'm excited to kind of dig into this story.
And to put it in perspective, where I live, as a bird flies, I'm maybe a half a mile from the house that he killed the members of the family in, the Otero family.
Yeah.
So I live really close. I drive by that house like every other day, probably.
And it's a family home still, correct? Somebody lives in it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. When it was for sale a couple years ago, they put up like this hand-painted sign in the front. Only serious people, no gawkers. So obviously when they opened it up trying to sell it, people were going in there just to look at it.
And that's good. Yeah.
As people do, you know.
It's
creepy. It was really creepy when I first realized that was the house years ago.
I can't say that I never, out of curiosity when living there, did not go and drive by some remnant of this case. The thing I drove by and knew what was his or where his home once stood in Park City, Kansas, which actually I had a house in Park City for a short period of time. It wasn't in his neighborhood, but I went and drove by that area, and it's now just it's an empty lot. They tore that house down.
Yeah, because of that, people driving by all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that was the right thing to do, was to tear down the house.
Which is interesting, because as far as we know, there were no murders that actually took place on his property, but that's where he lived. That's where this, you know, sick man spent his nights, you know, thinking about these things and plotting these things up.
So yeah, and he had this creepy kind of building out back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a shed or something that he turned into, like, his, lack of a better term, his equivalent of a man cave.
Oh, really?
But, yeah, and that's where he kept a lot of things.
It was like his trophy room?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm not saying trophy room in a light way, but I mean, that's essentially what serial killers have. They have their
He did keep things from every victim.
Yeah. They have these trophies or whatever you want to call them.
They're driver's license.
God, that's just creepy. I mean, I'm sure, you know, I never got out of my car there to look other than driving by, but I'm sure you walk by there and there's probably, you know, remnants of where that shed was. And that's just, yeah, it was a creepy thing, no matter what, any way you spin it.
But the creepiest thing about him was he lived in the community and nobody ever guessed it was him.
Yeah.
And my veterinarian was in Park City, and it was right across the street from where he worked. You know, he was a dog catcher, and I'm sure I ran into him. Then one time my dog ends up poisoned and somebody tries to break in my house that night. Not saying it was him, but it was super creepy.
Yeah. But,
you know, it's like I'd been at the vet like that day or a couple days before, and then my dog gets really sick and I had to rush her back to the vet, and I'm like, you know, she got really sick, and then somebody tried to break my house last night. A man, I saw him, and because I was home, and because I couldn't sleep because my dog's so sick. And I said, "Do you think that that person could have poisoned my dog?" And the vet's like, "Absolutely, it definitely could have been." So I don't know, but he fit into the community so well, like
And that's what we're going to...
Friends that went to church with him.
We're going
to
dig into his whole story. And that's an interesting thing about this case is so many people have a run-in or have a related story of how they somehow cross paths with him over time.
And he could be a big asshole.
Yeah. And so we'll talk about some of that as we continue into the story. Let's get into how everything began. This is how the story of Dennis Rader begins. He was born on March 9, 1945, to Dorothea May Rader and William Elvin Rader. He's one of four sons. His brothers are named Paul, Bill, and Jeff. Though born in Pittsburgh, Kansas, he grew up in Wichita. His parents both worked long hours and paid little attention to their children at home. He would later describe feeling ignored by his mother in particular and resenting her for it. From a very young age, Rader harbored sadistic sexual fantasies about torturing, trapped, and helpless women. He also exhibited pseudosadism by torturing, killing, and hanging small animals. He acted out sexual fetishes for voyeurism, autoerotic asphyxiation, and cross-dressing. He'd often spy on female neighbors while dressed in women's clothing, including women's underwear that he had stolen, and masturbate with ropes or other bindings around his arms and neck. Years later, during his cooling-off periods between murders, he would take pictures of himself wearing women's clothes and a female mask while bound. He'd later admit that he was pretending to be his victims as part of his sexual fantasy. He kept his sexual proclivities well hidden. However, he was widely regarded in his community as friendly and polite. Rader attended Kansas Wesleyan University after high school, but received mediocre grades and dropped out after 1 year. He spent 1966 to 1970 in the United States Air Force. Upon discharge, he moved to Park City, Kansas, where he worked in the meat department of a Leaker's IGA supermarket, where his mother was a bookkeeper. He married Paula Dietz on May 22, 1971, and they had two children, Carrie and Brian. He attended Butler Community College in El Dorado, earning an associate's degree in electronics in 1973. He then enrolled at Wichita State University and graduated in 1979 with a bachelor's degree in administration of justice. Rader worked as an assembler for the Coleman Company, an outdoor supply company. He worked at the Wichita-based office of ADT Security Services from 1974 to 1988, where he installed security alarms as part of his job, in many cases for homeowners concerned about the BTK killings. Rader was a census field operations supervisor for the Wichita area in 1989, before the 1990 federal census. In May 1991, he became a dog catcher and compliance officer in Park City. In this position, neighbors recalled him as being sometimes overzealous and extremely strict, as well as taking special pleasure in bullying and harassing single women. One neighbor complained he killed her dog for no reason. Rader was a member of Christ Lutheran Church and had been elected president of the church council. He was also a Cub Scout leader. On July 26, 2005, after Rader's arrest, his wife was granted an emergency divorce, waiving the normal waiting period. That's how the story of Dennis Rader begins. There you go, killing a dog for no apparent reason. That's great, man. Is it? How does this make you feel, kind of hearing these stories and these details again on this case all these years later? Because, I mean, it's been out of the spotlight.
I've heard frequently.
Sure.
So it's kind of living here for as long as I have. It's something that most of us, especially because, like, I do work in the media. Mm-hmm. And so we've heard the stories.
So many
but
times.
But it pisses me off every time I hear them.
Sure.
I'm like, that son of a bitch.
It's especially creepy when you have a case and you can hear the story and then you can picture half of the stuff that is being talked about. This is my first time going through this in great detail, other than when I pulled the entry. But I didn't know that he worked at the Leakers grocery store, which actually, when I worked in radio, I would go to that Leakers almost every day and go and have a salad from their salad bar and sit in my truck and eat it. I was a frequent customer of that grocery store, and I didn't know that he had worked there. Like, that's a new little connection I just learned about as reading this. But yeah, it's creepy to hear everything about this case. Let's continue on with more of the story of Dennis Rader. On January 15th, 1974, four members of the Otero family were murdered in Wichita, Kansas. The victims were Joseph Otero, age 38, Julie Otero, age 33, and two children, Joseph Otero Jr., age 9, and Josephine Otero, age 11. Their bodies were discovered by the family's eldest child, Charlie Otero, who was in 10th grade at the time, as he returned home from school. After his 2005 arrest, Rader confessed to killing the Otero family. Rader wrote a letter that had been stashed inside an engineering book in the Wichita Public Library in October 1974, which described in detail the killing of the Otero family in January of that year. In early 1978, he sent another letter to television station Cake in Wichita, claiming responsibility for the murders of the Oteros. Catherine Bright, Shirley Vine, and Nancy Fox. He suggested many possible names for himself, including the one that stuck, BTK. He demanded media attention in the second letter, and it was finally announced that Wichita did indeed have a serial killer at large. A poem was enclosed titled, "Oh, Death to Nancy," a parody of the lyrics to the American folk song, "Oh, Death." In the letter, he claimed to be driven to kill by Factor X, which he characterized as a supernatural element that also motivated the Jack the Ripper, Son of Sam, and Hillside Strangler murderers. He also intended to kill others such as Anna Williams, who in 1979, age 63, escaped death by returning home much later than expected. Rader explained during his confession that he became obsessed with Williams and was absolutely livid when she evaded him. He spent hours waiting at her home, but became impatient and left when she did not return home from visiting friends. Mary Ann Hedge, age 53, was found on May 5, 1985 at East 53rd Street North in between North Webb Road and North Greenwich Road in Wichita. Rader had killed her on April 27, 1985, and he took her dead body to his church, the Christ Lutheran Church, where He was the president of the church council. There, he photographed her body in various bondage positions. Rader had previously stored black plastic sheets and other materials at the church in preparation for the murder, and then later dumped the body in a remote ditch. He called his plan Project Cookie.
That's the preview. If you want to hear the full episode, be sure to subscribe to Dark Side of Wikipedia wherever you download podcasts and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. That's Dark Side of Wikipedia.